methods for collecting water samples contributed to test results that didn't capture the severity of Flint's lead problem. Officials asked residents to let their tap water run for 5 minutes the night before collecting a water sample. That's known as pre-flushing, a tactic used in Rhode Island until this February, when the Environmental Protection Agency advised against it. June Swallow, the chief of the Center for Drinking Water Quality at the Rhode Island Department of Health, told me more about it.
So I'm curious, pre-Flint, what were the steps that people had to take to draw water samples?
Thank you very much for coming and talking to me about this. So before we start talking about lead sampling in water, I just want to underscore that, you know, lead poisoning is a very important problem in Rhode Island. It is primarily a housing problem, and we have yet to identify a case of lead poisoning that was primarily related to water. Nonetheless, you know, lead in water is a bad thing, and we do want to minimize it. So pre-Flint, what we were doing, and what we're still doing, frankly, is implementing the lead and copper rule, which was designed more than 25 years ago in our regulations. And the purpose of the lead sampling at the homes was to evaluate whether corrosion control was working or whether corrosion control was needed.
Corrosion control is when water treatment plants add chemicals to prevent lead and copper from leaching into drinking water as it passes through old plumbing materials like pipes and solder, the pieces of metal that connect pipes.
The samples were actually not to find the maximum amount of lead that might come out of that tap ever. They weren't even designed to figure out what the exposure is of an individual person at that home. If you wanted to do those things, you would sample differently. So it was for the purpose of figuring out whether corrosion control was working. And what the rule called for was to have a kitchen or bathroom tap that was in regular use. That was where you're supposed to sample, at a house with a lead service line or lead solder, if such existed in the water system.
But those water samples still detect lead and copper. If lead levels exceed more than 15 parts per billion in more than 10% of the tap sampled, the utility in charge of the drinking water system has to notify its customers about elevated lead levels and health risks and take several additional steps to control the corrosion. The utility also has to share information with residents about other ways they can reduce their exposure to lead, things like using water filters or letting the tap run for several minutes before filling a glass of water. Water utilities are responsible for identifying and testing areas with the highest risk of lead contamination using criteria from the EPA.
So they're supposed to be high-risk locations, but at taps in regular use. So if you think about a tap in regular use, you know, your bathroom tap, it's run till cold every day, probably several times a day. So
it's run till cold?
Or more. I mean, if you turn on your tap and you hold your hand under the water, you will notice after a few seconds or a minute that the water gets colder. And what that means is that the water in your house is a little bit warmer than the water that's out in the street. So when you run till cold, you're basically flushing out the water that was sitting in your pipes all night, and you're bringing in the water from the street. By the way, that's essentially advice that has been given to people for years and years. Run your water a little bit before first thing in the morning, just before you're using it. It's sort of been standard advice for forever, I think.
So that was sort of the idea. The idea was to sort of mimic the way that people use the tap.
Exactly. So the purpose of the running till cold on the day before, which was the guidance that we were giving before February, was to mimic normal use, regular use, just in case that particular sample tap hadn't been in regular use. Our feeling was if the tap had been in regular use, then doing this would make no difference at all. If the tap had not been in regular use, that would mimic the conditions. And the whole point was to get a representative sample, as the rule called for, to figure out whether corrosion control was working.
In Flint, a few government workers are facing criminal charges for failing to use the proper corrosion control chemicals and for failing to collect water samples from areas with aging pipes, those high-risk locations Swallow is talking about. In addition to pre-flushing, they were also asking residents to clean out aerators found at the tip of faucets before collecting water samples. That's an outdated practice. Rhode Island stopped using it about 10 years ago after the EPA advised against it. Under newer guidelines from the EPA, Swallow says the state is also using bottles with wider openings to capture more lead particles from taps.
Okay, so there was a great deal of focusing on sampling techniques post-Flint, but I think most water professionals believe that the greater part of the issue was that the sample sites were not the high-risk type locations that they needed to be. However, certainly since EPA asked us to change our sampling protocols, we did, and we have.
Anything else I haven't asked you that you think would be important for our listeners to know about lead and copper testing in Rhode Island and what we're doing to keep tabs on whether corrosion control is working?
I would let you know the good news that we don't have any water systems that are exceeding the lead action level at this time, which is great news. We had some smaller water systems that exceeded the lead action level last year, and they aren't now, but also we have increased the reporting requirements for those systems for all small systems, actually, for lead and copper, just to keep even better tabs on what's going on in all of those water systems.
And the EPA is working on new regulations that would require removing all lead pipes that run from the main water system through the streets to your home.
That recommendation was made to EPA at the end of 2015. They are planning on getting some draft regulations out by 2017. And I just wanted to note that in Rhode Island, we do have thousands of lead service lines in our cities. And for homeowners who have a lead service line, I would just like to encourage them to think about removing that lead service line and just removing this source, this hazard, from their homes.
Water utility companies and homeowners share the cost of replacing lead service lines. The utility usually owns the lines that run from the water main to the curb, and the homeowner owns the lines from the curb to the house. And Rhode Island has tens of thousands of lead service lines.
I don't have a complete number, but we do know that there are 35,000 approximately in Providence. There are several more thousand in Newport. Presumably there are lead service lines in our other older cities as well.
June Swallow, thank you so much for sitting down with me to give me some context and some updates on how you're moving forward post-Flint.
Well, you're welcome, and thank you for the opportunity.